This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio and listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and you'll maybe even find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Soccer Mommy. I'm Megan Oftermat, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, Soccer Mommy is an FUV favorite. The session was incredible. Talk to me about what it was like to chat to Soccer Mommy again.
Well, I think the thing about anyone who follows Soccer Mommy or Sophie's lyricism knows that she's a deeply, deeply personal writer. She draws a lot from her life. A lot of that is universal. Whatever you happen to be going through, I particularly connected with her album, Color Theory. And at the time that we spoke in February of 2020, we began that conversation. Obviously, the pandemic happened. She released another album called Sometimes Forever. I didn't get a chance to talk to her about that. So I was really excited to be able to talk to her about Evergreen, which I think is one of just an absolutely phenomenal piece of work, a collection of very, very wistful, smart, ruminating songs, but with the sort of a dense beauty and luminosity to it. She wanted to bring great beauty into every single one of these 11 songs on Evergreen and has done so quite successfully. It's just a gorgeous record. It was really a treat to talk to Sophie about some hard things, some not so hard things. And I'm just really glad that she made a return visit to FUV.
What are we going to listen to from this beautiful album first?
We're going to start today's session with Sophie and her band and a song called Lost on FUV Live Sessions.
I'm not afraid to die.
I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Soccer Mommy, who is Sophie Allison and her band with Lost. That song was an early release from her fourth album, Evergreen, an elegiac, introspective, and luminously beautiful album. Song by song, Sophie is unafraid to write about the pain of profound, life-altering loss and the slow process of healing. Sophie describes herself in one of Evergreen's songs as a 5'4" engine waiting to move, which speaks eloquently to her tenacity, no matter what life has thrown at her. I last spoke to Sophie Allison in February 2020 around the release of Soccer Mommy's Color Theory on the edge of the pandemic before the world shut down, and I am so thrilled to have her and her entire band here today in Studio A. Sophie, thank you for not only being here, but for this remarkable new album, Evergreen. That made me break into an ugly cry around some sunny day, which is the fourth track on the album. I just melted. This is an absolutely stunning album.
Thank you.
And, you know, when we spoke around 2020 around Color Theory and how that album very much circled around your mom's illness at the time via songs like Grey Light, your mom, Michelle, was doing okay. My mom, concurrently, at the time we had spoken, was also dealing with a terminal illness. And I lost my mom later that year after we spoke in August of 2020. So knowing that you have since lost your mom and that this album has come from that experience. I mean, I know this is a very personal album for you. It became a very personal album for me, even though we're like decades apart in age. Mm-hmm. You know, I think going through what you went through in your teens and 20s is really hard. Did you have any hesitation with in writing this album about how deeply you wanted to go into what you're feeling personally in the aftermath of everything?
I have no problem talking about my personal feelings on things. I think where I have always not wanted to share with people is the backstory, the personal parts and all that kind of stuff, because I think that it's beyond me. You know, that's the thing. It's not just my life and everything's, you know, running around me. So I think that's the only difficult issue, because I'm personally a very private person, and I would never... I mean, I wouldn't talk to my friends about my personal life, and I've been, you know, very hesitant to talk to people about it before, and it's not something that, I don't know, I guess I've always not understood why if you write music or you write about something, it means that everyone needs to know why, you know, where it's all coming from, where is this in your life, where is this, like, who, what, when, where, why, how, you know. I think that I like to make what I make, and I think that people can pull different stuff from it, you know, like just like you were saying, you can have a completely different scenario in life and you can connect with it. And I think that's the beauty of art and music, is it doesn't have to be your personal story for it to be able to mean something to you. Yeah, I've always had a hesitation with that kind of stuff, but I try to keep it vague in a way for my own personal, you know, comfort.
And also, you know, Loss, which we opened this session with, is, you know, the lyrics in that are quite incredible. I mean, loss in a way you can't forget, loss in a way that never ends. But there's also, I would say, a brightness to this album, too, even mm-hmm. though that you are sort of dipping into some difficult passages. There's also a strength in all of these songs. You know, it seems to be a conversation that you're having continuously with yourself, possibly with other people too, but that assurance that you have, and also your determination with this album to make it just wrenchingly beautiful. I mean, that was sort of a mission statement for you. I am going to make mm-hmm. the most beautiful album ever.
Yeah, I really wanted to make it sonically just really feel light and beautiful and haunting, I guess. And I didn't want to, you know, let the songs get distracted, I guess, by a lot of production ideas and things like that are always really fun and I really love to get into. But I wanted the songs to really feel raw and straightforward, and I wanted to keep it to that. And I wanted the album to, you know, to be heard and there to be like this complex, these feelings that could be understood and, you know, not get kind of buried, I think, which I've done before. And I love that kind of music, too, where it's like secret lyrical, you know, messages. But I think that I wanted it to be something that let the lyrics speak for themselves, let the melodies and everything speak for themselves.
With every single one of your albums, you've shifted to different producers, and this time you chose to work with Benny Challen III at Maze Studios, which is his own studios in Atlanta. What was it about? Because Ben has worked with people like Washed Out, who has a very dense, beautiful sound, as well as Animal Collective, the same. You are, however, stripping back with this album a bit. So what made what is it about Ben that made it right for Evergreen?
I mean, he's a great producer, and I talked to a lot of people like on the phone and stuff, and he really just seemed to understand what I wanted to do and understand how we could get there and how we could make it interesting. A really good producer knows how to understand the idea that you're trying to say and get you there and make something that doesn't sound like everything else that's happening at the time or isn't just pulling an exact idea from somebody else. They can take these bits and pieces and make a new sound, you know, make a new album. And I think he really has that. And he's just like very dedicated and focused. I think working in the studio, it's like, we're going to get the things we wanted to get and then we need to get. And it was very cohesive, I think, for that reason.
You know, watching you and the band, and we'll talk more about the band in a second, but watching you all, there's obviously each of you are very attentive to nuances of what you're looking for, even in doing this session. So the entire process, the time that you spent at Maze, how long was that in total?
It was different chunks. I first kind of went and we did pre-production, me and Ben. And we tried out on a couple of the songs a lot of ideas and kind of basically made the songs, but we were like, obviously we're going to want to come in and do live drums and do these kind of things. So we did a bunch of that in October of 2023. And then in December, we came in, I think we did like 10 days maybe where we attacked all the songs and got these kind of like rhythm drum and bass tracks done, some guitar overdubs for certain types of things and some keys stuff, and got a bunch of that done for that 10 days. I think it was 10 days. And then I came back in February and I did vocals. We like took a look at all the songs and said, okay, let's join this all together. This doesn't need to be here. This doesn't need to be here. We want to take this. We did all of that kind of stuff and then recorded anything that we thought we still needed to do.
The sequencing is very powerful in here, especially, you know, I would say the first five songs feel like the big of sweet almost, because there is this progression. And then there's a very song, funny song, Abigail. I'm going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
And then again, there's yet another sort of turn that is made, and it ends landing, the album lands on the title track of Evergreen. Where did you sort of puzzle that out for yourself of what that arc, that story that you wanted to tell, whether we could figure it out or not, but what that internal story was for you that you needed to tell in these 11 tracks?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think they're not like chronological or anything in some kind of storytelling type of way, but I really do care a lot about sequencing. I think it can change the way you see everything. And, you know, I think it's what gets you into listening to an album as a whole versus tracks that you like and makes you find those songs that are like the, you know, the sleeper hits a little bit. And I always like when there's a bit of like kind of warmth and lightness and, you know, just easy to latch onto type of songs at the top, and the second half of the album has some that might end up being people's favorites, but they're, you know, take a little bit more time and they're a little bit, you know, different maybe from what you wanted the record to be presented as. I always kind of have that in my brain when I'm doing sequencing. I'm like, that's the second half of the record song. This is the first half of the record song. You know, this is middle. This is a song that's going to be the end song probably, which I originally thought was going to be Lost.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and I was going to put Lost there and Evergreen at the end of the first side of the record. And we kind of had some ideas and switched some stuff around and ended up with what we have now.
It makes so much sense. And I can see that too. I will say that Some Sunny Day, Thinking of You, Salt in the Wound are like three of the most beautiful songs I've heard in like a million years. They're extraordinary. Changes was a very pivotal track because that was very much at the starting point, correct?
Yeah, kind of. So I wrote that song actually when we were in the studio for Sometimes Forever. And I could have brought it in to record, but I just knew it wasn't it wasn't fitting of the album, as we can hear now. So I kind of tabled it and put it off to the side, but it was something I really liked, and I thought maybe this will just be a song that I really love, but that I never record. It's just like a thing for me. And once I started working on the album, which the first song was actually M, that was like written for the record, I guess, so to speak. Once I started getting into that, I was like, this makes a lot of sense for this album, and I want to put this song on here. And I think it really still fits so well, despite being about really something entirely different, but not that different. It's just about change and looking at things in your life. And I think seeing how many things used to be important to you and now aren't, or used to be people used to love that now you don't even know. And all of these changes that happen so gradually, I guess, that it's like scary to think of things slipping away like that and you don't even see them happening. But that really fits in the idea of the album. So
very much so. Your bandmates are here. Were all your bandmates on the in the recording of the album?
Yeah, they all played on the album.
I love that. Well, very quickly, let's run through everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with Julian Powell, who you know very well.
I know him a bit. A little bit.
On guitar, and do you want to introduce everybody else?
Yeah. Well, obviously we got Julian on guitar, who has been playing guitar for me since I started touring. So he's the only person that has survived that long being around me. We've got Rodrigo Avendano plays keys and guitar. And we have Nick Widener on bass and Rollam Haas on the drums.
And I must mention that I gushed over Sophie's guitar. She has a couple of great guitars. One is a sort of plum-colored Fender with a pickup that's absolutely gorgeous. And I completely made a fool of myself over your guitars. And what was the other one? It's an Ovo? It's made in Nashville?
Novo. Yeah, it's a Nashville company. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either.
Those are amazing. They're
amazing guitars. There are a lot of metaphors or allusions to driving, being in cars, sort of being deep in thought while driving on this album. Was that something that you sort of stumbled upon as you were writing, going, I've written a lot about being in a car here? Was that accidental, or was that sort of a deliberate thread that you found interesting to wind through these songs?
Honestly, I think it's always been really in there. I always write about that. I always throw in lines about that or think about that. When I lived in New York, I didn't think about it as much because you're not driving.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think it's such a like perfect picture of what it feels like to be in a small town. You're alone. That's where I listen to all my music. You know, you can, when the weather's good, you roll the windows down. It feels great. And I think it's a really pensive time. And it's also a really romantic space, you know, in other ways that I've seen over time. But I think this album really comes back to a lot of themes I've used a lot in early stuff. Like, I think driving, I've definitely used before. I've used nature stuff all the time. And I think that, you know, kind of comes from just what I'm seeing around me and all these things that you're subconsciously, I guess, absorbing.
Earlier, I quoted a lyric from Driver that, and I'm assuming it is you, but I might be wrong, a 5'4" engine waiting to move. That is you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what me. I figured. There is another line, too, in here I really like. My head is a highway all the time, which I totally related to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful lines in this song. Given that you have said that many of your early demos and that your vision for this album was that it was going to be more simple, but that you'd also have things like flutes, you'd also have things like strings. Did Driver build quite suddenly, or did it become layered very gradually as you were in the studio with it?
I think with Driver, there was an obvious way to go with it, that you could just play this rock song just kind of straight up. And it was like, how can we take this apart? How can we make it fit into the record? Not only that, but do something that is unexpected with it, like going to that kind of chorus part and it's like drop. And it's this like really beautiful, lush sounding section rather than getting heavier and heavier. It's like building, I think, dynamic change in a different way, which I think is extremely important when you're recording. It's like dynamics make everything feel how they're supposed to feel. And if you can't build those things by having surprises and changes and things that people aren't expecting, it's like, it's not as satisfying.
Well, it is an absolutely astonishing song. I was very excited to know that you would be doing it today. I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and this is Soccer Mommy with Driver. I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Soccer Mommy with a live version of Driver. The original can be found on Soccer Mommy's fourth album, Evergreen, and Sophie Allison is here in the studio with me. And you have to tell me a little bit about Stardew Valley, because Abigail, it's just very funny, in the middle of this album, refers to that. It is about your faux farm and your faux wife on your faux farm. Yes?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And this is a, I have not played this game.
But it's a great game.
But you are apparently very good at it or very obsessed
with it. I mean, I don't know if you can be good at it.
Yes.
You know, because it really is just about you doing what you want to do.
What is on your faux farm? What do you grow on your faux farm?
I have lots of plants. I mean, I change them sometimes, but I have tons of stuff. I have melons. I have corn. I have cactuses. I have, you know, berries. There's just like so much stuff you can grow.
Any animal?
I have pigs. I have like a horse. I have cows. I have chickens. I have ducks. I have a dinosaur. I know that doesn't make sense, but that's in there. Rabbits. There's like slimes that you can have in a hutch. So yeah, it's really.
And Abigail came out of, like, Abigail was, he's a fake wife that you have.
Yeah,
on this farm.
So part of the game is that you have these goals around, you know, the world that you're in, around the town and stuff, where you can, like, go mining and get to a certain level, or, you know, farm certain things and get your quality up and get your skill levels up on things. But you can also date. You can also go around and you can give gifts to people, and it raises their heart levels, and then you can get married. So that's my wife.
I love it.
Yeah.
With purple hair.
Yeah, she has purple hair.
Oh, God, this is so... I have, like, I hate to admit, I was not aware. I'm not a big games person, mm-hmm. and I had to...
You had to do research.
I had to research this, and then I was like, wow, this is cool. I must talk to Sophie about this.
Yeah, it's a great... It's, like, the best game in the world.
Well, it's great for being on tour, too, mm-hmm. you know? It keeps you busy.
It's peaceful, too. It's yeah. not, like... It's not stressful, you know? You can kind of do things as you want, and there's not high stakes usually, no. but it is a challenge. There are challenges if you right. want to take those things on.
Well, and it's also nice to have a game that's like not violent, mm-hmm. you know, aside from like throwing a melon at someone potentially.
Yeah. Oh no, you can fight you can fight ghosts and stuff.
Oh well, see, but that's okay.
Yeah, you know. It's a little different.
you've been living in Nashville. You are a native. Well, no, you were actually born in Switzerland, but yeah. you are pretty much a native Nashvillian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I guess that's not a word, but I did now.
No, I think it is Nashvillian. Yeah,
and you and Julian live there, and you have your whole community there. A lot of musicians of all sorts of various genres are there now. It's not just country music. I think we spoke about this in the past. I've spoken about it with like Yola and Allison Russell about this incredible community of musicians there. And I'm wondering whether or not, you know, you feel grounded there. There's never been this sort of wanderlust about trying to live elsewhere.
Well, honestly, no. I do feel grounded there. It feels like home. It always has. But I mean, I lived here for 2 years and I wanted to be right. here. The only reason I really left was because I was deciding to take off from school and go travel and be broke. And I was like, I can't live here.
No,
can't
it's unaffordable.
I was like, I'm going to live in like my parents, like my childhood bedroom.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do for as long as they let me until they kick me out. Which is a huge thing to have, to be able to do that. I have to say it because I don't think I could have done what I did if I had not been able to live with my parents and not have to pay rent at a place, because it's very thankless at the beginning and you don't make any money, but you have to spend all your time doing it. So it's very hard. But I definitely had that. And I think the only reason I didn't end up going back is traveling so much. You see the world, you get to see all these amazing things. I don't want to come home to chaos. I want to like a place that can be my space, and I can easily do the things I need to do between tours and see my friends really easily. And it's just been really peaceful. I think it's a great city. There's a lot of stuff I hate about it. A lot of stuff I don't like, a lot of stuff that's changed, but it also still has a lot of really cool people and a lot of really cool stuff.
You also have a 4-month tour in 2025, which will take you sadly far away from your home for a while, but it's a great thing because this is a wonderful album. But I was also intrigued by you again opening for Slow Dive in an event coming up. And you've actually toured with them in the past, mm-hmm. because I think that there's a beautiful symmetry in what Slow Dive does and what you do too. You also covered them on your EP.
Yeah, last year.
And what is it about Slow Dive that was all, that's intriguing to you? And what is the connection that you feel with this band?
No, I mean, I love Slow Dive. And I also think I can get into, I'm going to get into all the backstory, but just to say up front, I think that they, their new album is really, really great, the most recent one. And I think it takes a lot of talent, a lot of skill to be gone for a period of time and come back and like be doing something new. And it's amazing. I think a lot of times people try to do that and they're not good at it, but they're just obviously so, so talented. And for me, Souvlaki is like one of my favorite albums ever. It's up there. It's like I constantly return to it. Love every song. I never get tired of it, really. It was really a dream to, we played two shows with them where we opened, and I've seen them a couple times at festivals too, and it's always so amazing getting to see them. And for me, that was really a band that kind of got me into like indie world a little bit. Like that was the first shoegaze band that I got into. And then it was like My Bloody Valentine, you know, Go There and Cocteau Twins and all that kind of stuff, like was coming from that starting point a little bit. And it was something I just was so amazed by and fell in love with. And it's so honestly integral to what I do now. I love like a song like Dagger, for example, that I covered. It's just, you're just playing like acoustic guitar and singing, but it's all about the ambiance and the vibe that you're creating around a song that's already so amazing. And I think that that's really special. And it's like a really important thing to do that is oftentimes overlooked.
It's interesting because I felt their presence, Cocteau Twins' presence, very strongly in Evergreen, that there was definitely a connection in what you were achieving and that sort of dense, luminous beauty and spareness with song by song with something that you might hear on Heaven or Las Vegas, mm-hmm. as well, or on, you know, any like Slow Dive's most recent album. So yeah, that's why I wanted to talk to you about it, because obviously mm-hmm. you feel like you're very much, a lot of these bands had their heyday long before you were born, mm-hmm. and then it's lovely that you've discovered them and made them your own.
Yeah.
M, which is the second song on the album, is I hope it's okay to say painfully personal, but you make it universal. So whatever is you draw from that song lyrically is obviously, anyone can make it whatever they want it to be. But I was sort of wondering, given the fact that there's, again, this very layered quality to it, when you brought that song into Ben, given the fact that it was the earliest song that you did for that album, did the demo resemble anything to what you eventually ended up with here on this album?
Yeah, I think it really did.
Yeah, it did.
It's obviously, I mean, it sounds much more figured out and everything with the way that it is now, but it was super straightforward, just like acoustic guitar and vocals, and I had a little flute patch that I was using, and I had the outro and everything. Like the technical arrangement is all pretty much there. It's just adding a little bit of like band to it, because I don't ever demo with that kind of stuff at my house. But I think that one really struck, like I wrote it and it wasn't, it was like I liked what the, obviously what I was saying in the song, but also it just felt fresh sonically, and I knew what I wanted to do with it, and I couldn't wait to get in the studio and work on that one, especially like the outro too. I like really wanted to turn into something beautiful and just like cinematic, really.
In terms of as a guitarist, who was a big inspiration for you when you were first getting your bearings as a guitarist, that you were sort of looking at somebody as far as their tuning, or that was
honestly what? I think when I first started playing guitar, I was so young. I was like 5 or 6. So I didn't bother with any of that. But when I was especially like, you know, becoming a teenager and stuff, I think I was really attracted to people who tried to do interesting things with chords. Like Liz Phair, honestly, I think is great. Like she has such interesting chords and she's just figuring it out just by trying things. Or Joni Mitchell, I think, is amazing and just has so many beautiful sonic ideas. And
all
that's
open
the stuff
tuning.
Yeah, I love the open tuning stuff. I think it's so interesting to like approach music in a way where, as someone who played guitar for a long time and knew like, you know, the notes on the neck and kind of the chord shapes and that meant this and meant that and what it sounded like. It's so beautiful to escape all of your knowledge and be like, let me just find something that sounds cool and I won't know what I'm even playing. Because it frees you from like the logic of everything.
Well, Sophie, it is such a pleasure to talk to you again. Soccer Mommy's new album is Evergreen. Thank you for making me cry. I don't often thank people for making me cry, but it really is such an astonishing accomplishment. This album is one of the most beautiful albums I've heard in a very long time.
Thank you.
And I'm very happy for you. And you're going to play M now, and I'll probably cry along with that as well. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next year on tour.
Yeah, I'll see you then.
All right. Thank you, Sophie. I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and this is Soccer Mommy with M. That was Soccer Mommy performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Sophie and her band for joining us in our studio and to Concord Records. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, Zach Tomasi, and Olivia Grant. Our FUV Live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Diane Juarez and Catherine Sherman. Megan Aftermat is our executive producer, and our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday, and you can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.